So today I was asked that I'll talk about insights to the Haggadah. That's what was their request. So I prepared few items that I would like to discuss with you. You know, part of it, it will be, you know, like a nice vort that you can recite, but some of it can be a little bit more than just a vort. So what I would like to start with is the idea of meaning and identity. So I'll start with that. And where you can also find it in the Haggadah itself, which is interesting. You know, when you think about Parashat Shmot and Sefer Shmot, Shmot are names. And you would expect that you will have a lot of names, especially in the first Parsha. But it's interesting to note that the Torah specifically do not mention names. We have at the beginning, ואלה שמות בני ישראל הבאים מצרים, מעט יעקב וישו ותובעו, ראובן שמעון לוי ויהודה, יששכר זבולון ובנימין, דן ונפתלי גד ואשר. So we have the names of the tribes, and then Yosef היה במצרים. And we don't even mention his children's name. Now, if you compare it to Parashat Vayigash, there is a list of all the 70 people, or 68, or it depends how you calculate, of the people who went down to Mitzrayim. Now, I understand, in Shmot you don't need to repeat it, you don't want to repeat the names, you have it in Vayigash. But it's fascinating that the only name after V'Yosef Haya B'Mitzrayim, until a while, is Paro. Paro. Paro's name is there. Who are the people that are mentioned but not by name? Moshe's parents. Vayikach, vayelech ish mi beit Levi, vayikach et bat Levi. So no names. We have the meyaldot, the midwives, that we don't know their names. And we have the daughter of Pharaoh, that we don't know her name either. The only name, first name that comes after Paro is Moshe. And he is named by... Oh, that's a big question. Among the Rishonim, there is a question, who exactly gave him his name? Was it Pharaoh's daughter, or was that his mother? Okay, but not now. But the idea... Oh, sorry, didn't say anything yet.
Later on, it starts again with the Shemot, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and it gets to Moshe...
And it stops.
And then the rest...
Mm-hmm. No, it's just because you look at the Mefarshim there says that basically Hashem did not want to make a list of lineage, but he didn't want just to start with Moshe and Aaron. It's not nice. And also he doesn't want to convey a misconception that Moshe and Aaron are like the firstborn. So you have Reuven and you have Shimon and you have Levi. Also the Midrash says that God was looking for a redeemer at the tribe of Reuven, couldn't find anything, went to Shimon, couldn't find anyone, went to Levi, found Moshe and Aaron, and he stopped there. But that's why. Also, there is another explanation that those are the three tribes that were not enslaved in Mitzrayim. There are many different interpretations. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, we all knew about Levi, but there is a Midrash that says it's also Reuven and Shimon, which is interesting. So, obviously the question is, not only why we don't have names, but why would the Torah would intentionally go out of its way to do what? To erase their names, to not mention their names. It will be easier to say Vayelech Amram Vayikach et Yochevet. Instead, Vayelech Ish mi Bet Levi Vayikach et Bat Levi. 8 instead of 5. Now you say, okay, it's not a big deal. It's a big deal in the Torah. Why do we have it? So, let's pause here for a second. So our question is, we have a very, I will say, a very important name for the Parsha, Parshat Shmot. We are expecting to have names, and then we have no names for a while. But let's pause for a second. We know that Noah had three children, Shem, Ham, and Yefet. And we know that each one of them represented an idea or ideology or a trend, inclination to something. Ham is about what? What is Ham? Chom. Emotions, feelings, heat of the moment, and also desires, according to the Midrashim and Chochmat Chazal, and what our sages says. Yefet, from the word Yofi, which is beauty, pleasantness, Pleasantness, not much, but beauty. And talking about, if we look at the descendants of Yefet, especially the Greeks, we're talking about tremendous beauty. Beauty of the body, beauty of art, and all sorts of things. What is Shem? Name. Shkoyach, no? What's the name? So, there is a fascinating story in Gemara in Yoma. If I'm not mistaken, it's Pei Gimel. Don't hold me to that word. Now I'm confused with all the questions I'm being asked. So I think it's Gemara in your mind, Pegime, that says that Rabbi Meir have a medayik bishma. Rabbi Meir was very meticulous. When you give him a name, he will be very meticulous. He will know who you are by your name. And the Gemara brings a story that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, I think, went on a little journey. And then they had to stop in a little motel. And the guy in the motel says to them, you know, before you go to sleep, just deposit your wallets with me and I'll keep it for you until the morning. So Rabbi Meir asked him, what's your name? He says to him, Kidor. Rabbi Meir says, Moichel Toivus, I'm keeping my wallet in my pocket. But Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yuda, whatever, they gave him their wallets. Waking up the next morning, you can probably figure out by yourself, no wallets. They all come to Rabbi Meir and says to him, you know, how did you know? How did you know? Rabbi Meir says to them, how could you give it to him? He told you his name. What is Kidor? So Rabbi Meir says, there is a simple pasuk in the Torah. It says what? Kidor tahapuchot ema, banim lo emun bam. It really says it about the Jewish people, but the Jewish people are Dorta hapuchot, it's a generation that always on the move, always transform. Banim lo emun bam, there is no trust in them. So when he told me his name is Kidor, I immediately realized I'm not trusting him. And then the Gemara found a way to get the wallets back. But this is not the issue. The issue is that the name shows who you are. It gives you identity. The Gemara in the same place says, she learns the pasuk, asher sam shamot ba'aretz, al tikri shamot, ela shemot. What is shama? Not shama, there. What is shama? Or shmama? Nothing, desolation, desert, nothing. The Gemara takes the word shmama, asher sam shamot ba'aretz, and turn it into what? Shemot, which means what? Exactly the opposite from desolation, exactly the opposite of a desert, which means from nothingness to something. So Shem is identity. Now, who came from Shem? Mostly us. Now, some people have a mistake that, you know, we are all about the meaning and the name and the identity, and we don't care about aesthetics, we don't care about emotions. It's not true. We try to gather all the three siblings together. But the idea is that Shem is Mahut. But in order to have Mahut, in order to have essence, in order to have a personality, what do you need to do? You need to stand up for something that it's not right. Or really to stand up against, something that it's not right. You need to really show that you have personality in terms that you care about others. So therefore, if that's true, take a look at what's happened here. Paro has an identity, an evil one, but he has an identity. His name is being mentioned. By the way, where do you think the root of Paro comes from? There is no root, it's a name, it's not a verb. But it's a title, but what does it mean? It could be Ramses. The Torah Bechavana specifically chose the word Paro. There is a connotation. If you are sensitive to the Tanakh, you can hear a connotation. Pera. Okay, I'm not Dorshei Reshumot. Like from a Pasuk. Ki Aharon Bekamehem. Ki Aharon Bekamehem. The Shimtza Bekamehem. Ki Prao Aharon Le Shimtza Bekamehem. When Moshe came down from Har Sinai and he saw the golden calf, the Egel HaZahav, and the dancing and everything, it says ki Aharon, that Aharon pra'o leshimtza becoming, he allowed them to become wild. He allowed them to become uncontrollable. They did whatever they want. What is parua? Wild. When we have se'ar pera, se'ar osho, it means what? All over the place. Okay? Like you didn't get a haircut for a while. Parua is someone that is not controlled, someone is not disciplined, someone who can do whatever he or she wants. Paro feels that what? That he can do whatever he wants. Therefore, he takes the midwives, and I don't care now if they are Jewish midwives or Egyptian midwives, it's a machloket, which is, by the way, an interesting thing, and he commands them to do what? To kill the baby boys, which means what? It's like telling a doctor who was trained to save lives to do what? To murder someone. He knows he's asking them to do what? To do something against their nature. Totally against their nature. Why? Because akol parua. There is no nature, there are no rules, there is no guidelines, there is no structure. You can do whatever you want. What do they do? You have two options. They could stand up and say, Paro, not doing that. We took an oath, you know, the doctor's oath, we are not doing that. And then that will be their last speech, right? Paro will kill them. Or they could say, lovely, we would love to do it, why not? What did they do? How did they manage not to execute or to implement Pharaoh's decree? What did they do? Made excuses. They changed the reality. They told Paro, look, you told us that what to come and to kill the baby boys. We will do it gladly. Or not gladly, but we will do it. But we just can't. Why? Because the reality is not exactly the way you see it. The reality is that they give birth before me, before we come. Now, when you think about what I said about Pharaoh's name, I think we'll understand it. If I was Paro, I would tell them, do you think I was born yesterday? Like all those Jewish women know exactly how to give birth before you come, so you never helped a Jew to give birth? A Jewish woman to give birth? Are you kidding me? What are you? Are you making a joke out of me? If I was Paro, that's exactly what I would say. Instead, what do you think Paro is doing? I mean, the Torah says. He says, you know what? All the baby boys should be thrown into the river. Why do you think he believed them? Did you ever ask yourself that question? Come on. Why would you think Paro would believe them?
Maybe he was in awe of the Jewish women,
right? No, I'll tell you why, because of what I said before. For him, what basically guides him is there is no structure, you can do whatever you want. Everything is possible, right? If everything is possible, it might be that what? That it's true. If he would go and check after them, he would go against his own ideology. That everything is wild, everything is, I'm God, I can make rules, I can change the nature, I can change... If I'm telling you now something that doesn't make too much sense, but it's parua, in Hebrew we say, wow, ze hazui. What is hazui? It's like, I'm sorry, it's like... Which is what? It's like a dream. It makes no sense. It has nothing to do with reality. Like, ze parua, it's a wild idea. Right? That's what we say in America. It's a wild idea. So the idea is that they were able to convince him to believe to his own ideology. That's how they convinced him. But their names are not mentioned. It's Shifra and Pua that we are not sure that that's their names, whatever. But the thing is, why their real names are not mentioned? Very simple. They did stand for something, but not as strong as they should. Therefore, their names are not yet mentioned. Next one, Pharaoh's daughter. Rewarded them, everything is wonderful, but their names will not be mentioned. only later on. And we'll see when later on. Pharaoh's daughter. We could give her a name. She did something amazing. The what? Batya. Now, who gave her that name? Definitely not Paro and not her mother. Okay? Batya is the daughter of God. The Midrash is incredible. The Midrash says, you gave Moshe his name, and I'm going to use that name, and I, God says, going to name you my daughter. That's the Midrash. Now, what does she do? So she takes that baby, she has compassion on him and everything, and she brings him to the castle, to the palace. Now, Paro probably agreed to have that Jewish boy in the palace, which is a little strange. You're throwing all the baby boys to the river, now you have a Jewish baby boy in your palace and you let him play. Okay, it's all wild. And that's beautiful. What she did is incredible. But there is one thing that she didn't do. She didn't tell Paro, Father, what you do, stop it. Stand against him. Say, what you do is wrong. Meaning, don't get me wrong, what she did, incredible. She saved Moshe's life. By nature. I mean, if God wanted it, obviously he could do other things, but she saved his life. But she didn't fight evil. She privately did her own deed, which is unbelievable. And maybe she would never be able to convince Paro, but she never even condemned. She never even protested her dissatisfaction from Pharaoh's decree. Therefore, her name is not yet mentioned. Moshe. Moshe's name is mentioned, but what did Moshe do in order to earn his name? Nothing. He was just a cute baby in a basket. But if you know grammar, Hebrew grammar, what should be his name? Karov. Mashui. Mashui. He was drawn out of the river. He was Mashui. What is Moshe? Moshe, he is going to what? To take other people from the water. So that's name on for the future. Now take a look at Moshe. First encounter we have about on Moshe is besides the fact he was born and there was light and all. When he grows up, he leaves his palace and he does what? Vayetzeh lechav. He goes out to his brothers. By the way, brothers can be interpreted in two ways, and the Mefarshim has a dispute over it. Most of the Mefarshim says echav, the Jews. How did he know he is a Jew? His mother taught him. Maybe they came for visiting day, you know, his parents. Maybe, you know, they did a, what do you call it, FaceTime. He knew. Let's say the commentary is how somehow create something that he knew. You know what the Ibn Ezra says? Which makes so much sense in the narrative itself. Vayetzeh lechav ha-mitzrim. The Egyptians were his brothers, not the Jews. Let me follow the Ibn Ezra for a second, because if I look at that like that, I think Moshe becomes even greater. Moshe is my hero. I think he becomes even greater. He leaves the palace, he goes to his Egyptian brothers to see what's going on. He, according to the Midrashim and everything, he was like second in command, so he was going to be a king. What does he do? He doesn't sit in his palace, in his ivory tower. He goes to the Shetach. He goes to see what's going on. Then he sees what? Ish Mitzri makeh ish Ivri me'echav. So me'echav, according to the Ibn Ezra, needs to be ish Mitzri me'echav makeh ish Ivri. So there's a little bit of a problem in reading the Pasuk. But he sees what? He sees injustice that is from his own people. He is not, it's interesting, he has nothing to do with the Jews now. He just sees something that it's not right. He sees someone who has an authority over someone else and he beats him up. He says, that's not right. That's injustice. And what does he do? He kills him. Now, you can say this is a little impulsive. I mean, talk to him, tell him, must speak. Maybe he did. Maybe the Torah does not specify it. Now, if you say that the brothers were Jews, so you can fully understand, you know, the emotions to see a Jewish brother being beaten up by an Egyptian policeman, you know, you want to stop it. But that's what he does. He fights for injustice. He doesn't try to say, you know, after he beat him up, hey, Mustafa, I don't know, whatever the Egyptian name would be, come here for a second. You know, it's really not nice to beat him like that. You know, if you want to beat him up, do it gently. You know, do it when no one sees. No. Moshe went and stopped it. The second day he goes and he sees the two Hebrew men fighting. And what does he say to the other? Rasha, lama ta kerecha? Bishlama, yesterday I could understand why an Egyptian policeman would beat up a Jew. He feels the authority, the power, you know. And even then I stopped. Here, why? You are, both of you are slaves, so what's the benefit of beating up each other? Now, I want to ask you a question. Why didn't he kill one of them? The minute he saw Datan trying to beat up Aviram, or Aviram trying to beat up Datan, or if they were not them, someone else, why didn't he just, you know, stop the... The what?
Our boys.
Yeah. So why not?
Because they're our boys.
Oh, so he felt that they are his brothers. And based on the Ibn Ezra interpretation? So, we'll keep that to the end because we need to go back almost to the Agadah. So Moshe sees injustice and he does something about it. Then later on, when he flees from Egypt, he sees the shepherds, you know, nudging Yitro's daughter, and he is intervening on their behalf. What's the common denominator? Moshe will not stand quietly when what?
Injustice.
When injustice is being done. That's, by the way, one of the reasons why Moshe stayed with Yitro was for the same reason. You know, the Midrash says that there were three people who were like on the executive committee that Pharaoh had. It was Eov, Bilam, and Yitro. Bilam gave the advice to Pharaoh to throw the Jewish boys, and then he was killed. Eov shatak, Eov was quiet, and therefore he suffered. And Yitro fled. He says, I do not agree with that. And he knew when you disagree with the king, you can't really do that. Right? So he had to flee. So he fled Egypt. So what do you see? What Yitro did? Same thing what Moshe did. He tried to what? To protest. When he saw it doesn't work, you don't need to be killed for it. So he fled. So Moshe's name is the first one who is being mentioned with the understanding of what will be in the future and that he will stand up for something that is right and just and against evil. Now, therefore, I'm not recommending, by the way, that you will say all of it in the letter Seder because you will be there until tomorrow. Okay, but you can take parts from it. When we go back to the Haggadah, so first we talk about what? We talk about Asher bachar banu, right? God bachar banu. Baruch hamakom, baruch hu. Baruch shenatan lanu. He gave us the Torah. He chose us to become his people. Kervanu leavodato. He got us closer to his service, to his divine presence. First and foremost, we need to know who we are. We need to know our meaning. Not only what is our Hebrew name means about our character, but who we are. What do we stand for? That's A. B. To be a free person is not to be free, to be oblivious or to ignore injustice. I will say exactly the opposite. As a free person, you are committed, to some extent you are even enslaved to what? To stand up for what is right and against what is wrong. A free person cannot allow himself the luxury, quote unquote, of ignoring injustice. A slave can. A slave has only one job in his life, to do what? Whatever the master ordered him. A free person has the obligation to see the others. If you want a name, if you want a shem, do something for it. Yes, as the Midrashim says, there is a name that was given to you by your parents, there is a name that was given to you by your friends, and there is a name that you make for yourself. And it's not only, by the way, it's not only that famous quote, in order for evil to triumph, you need good people to be quiet or something like that. There is, I forgot who said it. But the idea is, it's more than that. It's not only not to be quiet, it's to do something about it. So where do you see that in the Seder? First and foremost, let's start with halacha. The Rambam says in Ilchot Yom Tov that every Simchat Yom Tov, every meal for Yom Tov, you need to have aniyim, poor people. But now, by the way, not poor people that they have no bank account. It can be poor people, needy people, people who were not invited, whatever it was. And if not, it's not Simchat Yom Tov, but a Simchat Kreiso. And if you don't have them, it's not Simchat Yom Tov, it's a Simcha of your belly, okay, your food and your belly, but not Simchat Yom Tov. On Pesach, we know that we have a special proclamation. Kol dichvin yetev yitzrach. Kol dichvin yetev yichol, kol ditzrich yetev yifzach. Why on Pesach we have a special proclamation? We don't say it on Shavuot. We don't say it on Sukkot. On Pesach, that will be the last Chag I will say that. Why? Because really, according to the halacha, if you are not appointed on my Korban Pesach, you can't eat from it. It's easier to invite you for Sukkot or for Shavuot, but not for Pesach. So what's the idea of making that proclamation bedavka specifically on Pesach? So I would like to give the following suggestion based on what we said before. When we invite the guests and we make a public proclamation, what do we show? What do we show? We show that we care about others. That we cannot sit here and enjoy the beautiful Seuda and the Seder if there is another Jew out there that what? That does not have it. We will not stand for something that it's not right. That's true freedom. So, I guess that what I would like to push is to talk about what does it mean to be free. Freedom gives more responsibilities than being a slave. A slave has only one responsibility, that's it. Don't upset your master, do what you were told, vigamano, and you are done. A free person? Now there is a saying in Hebrew, ein sechel en deagot. I don't know how you translate it into English, I guess you got it. The what? Ignorance is blessing, yeah, to some extent. But if you have knowledge, you have tremendous responsibilities. And that's the meaning of being free, and that's the meaning of having a name, as we said before. Okay. Now. Okay. This is a part from Rabbi Soloveitchik, and I will try to expand on it. You know, we say, Avadim ha'inu leparo v'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Pharaoh in Mitzrayim. The Hebrew grammar should be different. Should be Avdei Paro Ayinu BeMitzrayim. We were Pharaoh's slaves. The translation for Avadim Ayinu LeParo BeMitzrayim, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. But the Hebrew grammar should say Avdei Paro, we were Pharaoh's slaves. In the English, I'm not sure you understand the difference. Do you understand the difference in the English?
No.
In Hebrew, there is a major difference. If I'm saying, "Ani oved etzel," or "Ani oved shel," I am someone's walker, or I walk at someone's place. It's different. If I say I'm walking for, or I'm walking somewhere else, it's me, and I go and walk there. If I want to create more of a of authority connection, or master or slave connection, I would say, I walk for him. It's like, I belong to him. So it says, Avadim ha'inu leparo b'mitzrayim, it seems to be that we were slaves in Mitzrayim. It happened to be we were slaves in Mitzrayim, but we were never Pharaoh's slaves. It says Rav Soloveitchik, this is exactly the point. We were slaves, for sure, but we were never enslaved to Pharaoh. A Jew always found a way to be free. Now, obviously, it's very allegorically or metaphorically or based on some stories during the Shoah that people, you know, suffered tremendously, but they still felt that what? That they kept the mitzvot, that they were free, and they never... Oh, I saw a beautiful... You know me, I don't like too many stories, but I saw that story that really shocked me. And the story was that... Sometimes, but there is an interesting story, really. A Holocaust survivor came out from the camp and someone asked him, after a while, are you still Jewish? Like, you can get rid of it, but how can you still be Jewish? That's really, he was not religious, just Jewish. Says to him, nu barur, ma ani yeh lo yudi? Clearly. What do you think? I will not be Jew? Meaning, for me, their choice was what? Their choice was always to do what? To continue to be a Jew, despite the fact that what, they were enslaved and tortured and whatever, they knew who they are. Because they were never enslaved to the Nazis. And I think that this is another idea that you can share and maybe even discuss further with the people that you have, is how can you find in yourself, in times of darkness, in times of challenges, how do you find inner strength not to be enslaved to the situation? And also to know that in the big or the grand scheme of things, it's only a period in the time and it will pass. It's very difficult. Most people basically are so immersed in the moment and they can't see the next moment coming. So, avadim ha'inu leparo b'mitzrayim. Even when you are a slave, you can also still have the opportunity to keep your own freedom. Natan Sharansky, he came to Memphis once to speak in my shul, and he spoke about his time in prison, in the Gula. He will go, being investigated. He felt more free than the investigator. You need to be very strong. Very stubborn and very strong. But you can do it. So that's the second idea. Now, there is a question that all the Rishonim ask. What is missing at the beginning of the Haggadah? Think about it for just a second. What is missing in terms of, from a halachic perspective? That was quick. I barely had a sip. Okay, very good. The bracha. ברוך אתה השם, אלוקינו מלך העולם, אשר קידשנו במצוותיו וציוונו על סיפור יציאת מצרים. סיפור יציאת מצרים is a biblical thing, והגדת לבנך, biblical mitzvah. Why don't we have a bracha? Answer? Now you need to know the answer. Okay. So what was the answer that the Rishonim gives? Is that we have a bracha. Well, at the end, אשר גאלנו וגאל את אבותינו and all of that ונעשה לנו ניסים ונפלאות, wonderful, but we have a problem. A, what does it have anything to do with סיפור יציאת מצרים? A, B, that should be עובר לעשייתם. When I say the bracha, I should do the mitzvah immediately after the bracha. That's why we have such a balagan with נטילת ידיים, when exactly do you say the bracha? And here you say the bracha 3 hours later? מה יצא מזה? Right? What's the deal? So the Chatam Sofer says something brilliant that I'll share with you and we will expand on it. He says, look, the Gemara in Pesachim, where is that? I think Kuf Tet Zayin, Kuf Tet Vav, says, Matchil Begnut ומסיים בשבח. Right? We start the Haggadah with gnut, with disgrace that our forefathers were idol worshippers and also they were slaves in Egypt. So you have the physical enslavement, that you have the spiritual enslavement. And later on they became, as the Rambam says, וקרבנו לדת האמת. That God brought us closer to what? To the true religion. To the true religion. So therefore, at the beginning, says the Chatam Sofer, we are all what? Idol worshippers. And as an idol worshipper, I can say a bracha. Only after the process of conversion through the Seder, I can say the bracha at the end. It's like a ger. A ger, when he immerses himself in the mikveh, does not say the bracha. He says the bracha only what? After he goes out from the mikveh. So, beautiful. If you are a chassid, you have a vortale. But I didn't bite. What does it mean? Where is the process of conversion in the Haggadah? That was my question. It's a litvish. Now, the Chatam Sofer also have chidushim on the Shas, okay? So, I start thinking. And then I'm realizing it's a little bit metaphoric, but there is a process of conversion in the Seder. Let's think. What are the components of conversion? Regular conversion, not on Pesach. Chris would like to become Moshe. Okay? How Chris becomes Moshe? What's the process of conversion? Learning. Good. Okay, after the learning. Doing. The basics. Brit Milah is a man. Okay? Mikveh. Kabbalat Mitzvot. Right? And in the time of the Bet HaMikdash, Korban. A sacrifice. Right? Okay. Now we don't have a Bet HaMikdash, unfortunately, so, but we don't have a Korban. What do we have through the Seder? Do we have learning? What kind of learning? Torah Shebichtav or Torah Shebalpeh? Mostly Torah Shebalpeh. We have also Torah Shebichtav, but mostly Torah Shebalpeh, which is probably the most difficult thing for a ger. As the Gemara in Shabbat, in the Flamet, says that the ger came to Shammai and he told him, look, I believe in the Torah Shebichtav, but I don't believe in Torah Shebalpeh. And what Shammai did? What he always do. Sent him to Hillel. Okay, so Hillel took him and says to him, no, he told him Aleph Bet, and then he told him Bet Aleph, and says to me, what are you doing? He says, like, you believe to me Aleph Bet Gimel, you should believe to me Gimel Bet Aleph. And he taught him Torah Shebal Peh. So we have learning, there's no question. Do we have Korban Pesach? Yeah, we have Kivyachol, right? Koyerech, Zecher Amikdash Kehillel. Where is the mikveh? So mikveh is done before. Many people go to the mikveh before the Shloshta Reganim, but I would like to take it to something more metaphoric, which is Tvila Bemei Adat, as the Rambam calls it. To immerse yourself in the sea of knowledge. Kol amarbe lesaper b'itziat Mitzrayim, harei ze meshubach. You immerse yourself in Torah. Now, there is also another thing. There is a tremendous emphasis on what I will call national identity during Leil HaSeder. Who we are as a nation, the history of our nation, because we quote from where? From Parashat Bikurim, from the history of the Jewish people. And that brings us to root. Amech Ami, Elokaich Elokai. There is need to be some kind of a national identification between you and your nation. That's part of what we do on Leil HaSeder. Robert? Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think that comes to a head at Ki'ilu Hu. You have to identify yourself as having personally experienced Yitzhak Mitzrayim.
Which is Tahlich Gerut. Which you need to go through a process of a metaphoric conversion. Which is incredible. When you think about it, Pesach always was an opportunity for conversion. Bring me two examples from Tanakh. Three examples from Tanakh. First with Yehoshua. Yehoshua, when they are about to enter the land of Israel, what did he do? Brit Milah for everyone. Zrik Adam. Korban. don't know if there was a mikveh or not, and re-kabbalat mitzvot, renewing our commitment for mitzvot. Gerut. Who is the second one? So you said Yoshiyahu, you jumped a little bit, but let's go with Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu did what? Destroyed idol worshipping from the land of Israel. He made the Korban, Azaat Brit, and Pesach. And the second one, which is the second, not the third, Chizkiyahu. Same thing, same process. Pesach always was recommitment to Judaism through what? Through a Brit. That's, by the way, that's on the only Chag. That if you are an Arel, you cannot participate. Now, by the way, not only Orla, physical Orla, but also what? Orlat Halev. The Gemara in Pesachim talks about what? Israel Mumar. A Jew that converted into other religions. Can he participate in Pesach? Yes.
So you cannot invite
another Jew at the same time? I don't want to talk about the halakha, but yes, you are allowed, but not the only one. Obviously, it's part of a group. You are allowed to invite him. I will say it like that. The Gemara talks about the idea that you should not have someone who is not Jewish for Yom Tov. Why? Because Shema Yarbe Bishvilo. Now, if you look at what's going on in the world, especially in the Chabad movement, it definitely does not apply. And many rabbis, you know, start saying other things, whatever. Today, many of the poskim, I will put it like that, says that you are allowed, especially if it's part of a group. Now, yes. Wow, okay. Which is wonderful, but you know there is a continuation for that sentence. And but the idea of freedom is definitely from there. Even the African American movement, same thing. So the Chatam Sofer talks about the process of conversion. And in a way, that's what we need to feel on Pesach. Not that we were not Jewish and now we become Jewish. This is not the topic, this is not the issue. The issue is what? The issue is that you, even when you are a Jew, you can go through a process of conversion. That's what I meant. The process of conversion is recommitting yourself to the values that we think that we always keep and do and appreciate and embrace. So when you think about it, this is a night of what? Of learning. It's a part of conversion. That's why all sorts of questions are being asked. The Tam, the Sheino Yodea Lishol, the Chacham, the Rasha. Everyone asks a question. The entire night is based on what? On questions and answers. According to some opinions in the Gemara, if you didn't sing Manishtana, you didn't fulfill your obligation of She'ela V'tshuva. I'm not talking about Pesach Matzah Umaro of Rabban Gamliel. You need to have a discussion. It's not preaching, it's learning. And I think this is a very important lesson on Leila Seder. It's not dictation. It's telling a story, which is totally different. And I will just end with the last thing, the Sfat Emet. The Sfat Emet, the Ger Rebbe, said something very interesting. He says that even the Peh Haya Bagalut. Even the mouth was in Galut. What does that mean? He says that if you look at the five languages of redemption, Hoceti, Vitzalti, Vegalti, Velakachti, Veheveti, it's corresponding to five parts of the, from throat to lips, that helps you to get your words out. So you have the voice, you have the tongue, you have the teeth, you have the lips, and you have one more thing that I forgot. I'm not an ENT doctor, okay? So you have five mutzaot garon. And it basically says that when the Jews were in exile, they were not able to talk. Now, what does it mean they were not able to talk? Obviously, they were able to talk. The thing is that they were not able to express their thoughts. They were not able to express their ideas into action. Only when they went out, they were able to. Also, to some extent, with Moshe. While in Mitzrayim, he was what? Kvad pe v'kvad lashon. After he left Mitzrayim, he didn't stop talking. He didn't stop talking for three books. After Shmot, you have Vayikra Bamidbar Dvarim. Especially Dvarim, 6.5 weeks of talking, which is the dream of every rabbi. Right? I'm not sure it's a dream for the congregant, but it's a rabbi's dream. So the idea is what? The ability to express ourselves. Now, if you really want to make it relevant, take a look at what's happened to the Jewish people in our recent history. The Jewish people didn't speak up while in exile. A little bit here, a little bit there. Look how much of a voice we have since the establishment of the State of Israel. If we don't talk, people talk on us, about us. I'm not here to tell you that this is correlating directly, exactly 100%. I'm not a prophet. But I would say that coming out of Galut has a tremendous national power. Look at what's happened with the election. I'm not going to say anything political. I'm just going to talk about effect. Since when, if there are elections in Uganda, it's going to make the CNN, the New York Times, the Italian newspaper, and the French newspaper? Maybe in the almost last page of the paper. Elections in Israel are like front page. Who cares? 8 million people in a little country. We have a voice. We are able to express ourselves because we are Bnei Chorin. We have an opinion that we can express. We have an idea that we can form. There are actions that we can take. This is the idea of Or LaGoyim, a light unto the nations, that you have a divine idea and you spread it and you talk about it and you are being respected for what you say. The idea of Pesach. Use your mouth for saying something that has meaning. So I think that this is also another idea to talk about. You know, we talk about freedom of speech, and what does it mean, freedom of speech? So if you take everything I said in the last hour together, freedom is the responsibility to stand up against evil. Freedom of speech. How do you craft your speech that you bring more justice, that you bring more help, that you bring more divine presence into our lives and to this universe? So I think that Leila Seder is an unbelievable opportunity, really unbelievable opportunity for us to talk about the values that we all believe in, from a Jewish perspective, and using the text as the springboard to really go on a journey of, how should I say that, of search, of A, who we are, talking about the name, to understand who we are, what do we stand for, what do we stand against, how do we formulate it, and what is the message that we have, first and foremost, to ourselves, to our family, to our nation, and to all the nations as well. Yes?
You want to come back to the Yeshua, you left us without an answer.
And that's your homework. Chag Sameach.